I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we spoke about The Art of Living, the latest book by the revered Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh. We spoke with one of his disciples, Brother Phap, from France. He is a Dharma teacher at the Unified Buddhist Church. This week, we thought we would get a different perspective, that of a nun with the Unified Buddhist Church, also from France. And so we have on the line a woman who has taken as her monastic name, when translated into English, is Sister Dedication. She is a Dharma teacher. She is a young Dharma teacher and has been following the path of Thich Nhat Hanh for the last 10 years. And so we're going to continue our conversation with the fascinating book, The Art of Living. Welcome, Sister Dedication.
Thank you so much, Fred. It's wonderful to be with you.
So we had a great chat with your colleague, Brother Phap, last week. And so I'm just going to continue on with some of the questions that came to me while I was reading the book. One of the things that is mentioned a few times in the book is calligraphy. And it seems like calligraphy is not just an art form, but is an actual spiritual practice. Could you speak to that and tell us, where does the spirituality come into the practice of calligraphy?
For our teacher, every act in our daily life is an art form. And I think that's probably why the book is called The Art of Living. And for him, one of the most beautiful ways to express this is in the practice of calligraphy. And so for us, the spiritual dimension, I think in the Christian tradition, we speak about having the energy of the Holy Spirit in us. And for us, the energy of mindfulness is equivalent somehow to that sacred energy. So when we are fully present with our body and mind, with whatever we are doing, whether we are cutting the carrot, whether we are brushing our teeth, or whether indeed we are drawing a calligraphy circle or even a calligraphy phrase, it's our presence that brings the energy of spirituality to whatever we are doing, the quality of our presence. And we can make every act of our daily life into something sacred. For us, we say the energy of mindfulness brings us in touch with the ultimate dimension. So for your Christian listeners, it connects us with God. When we are fully present to the wonder of life, as we open the faucet and see the miracle of water flowing out of the tap, we can say that we are connected to the miracle of life that somehow water represents. And we touch our own life kind of beyond space and time. We touch the gift of life. So whatever we do, and I think this is my brother last week, he mentioned that our practice is really applied. It's something we live in our daily life. And that's really something our teacher has contributed to the world with his teaching. So maybe not all of us are calligraphy artists who can pick up a brush and some ink and enjoy putting it to paper, but we may be artists in other ways, the way we take care of plants in our house, the way we prepare a meal for our family, the way we walk to work. So every aspect of our life, we can express that creativity, that reverence.
It's interesting because when I think of religion and calligraphy, most of the time, what occurred to me was thinking about Islam. They also practice calligraphy as well. I'm guessing you might know that. And it did occur to me that, yes, I do remember that that calligraphy is a Buddhist practice as well. And I think it would be a wonderful dialogue to have between Muslims and Buddhists about calligraphy. Just something that occurred to me. One thing that I wanted to mention, so you are a nun with the Unified Buddhist Church. And what I find interesting is that when Buddhism started becoming more popular in the West in the last 50 years or so, maybe even 60 years, there was this
I think there was this myth that Buddhism, as practiced in the various countries where it is predominant, did not have the social challenges that the Western religions, particularly Christianity and Judaism, had. And one of the myths, I believe, was that there was no such thing as any hierarchical issues or issues of sexism. And as we started learning more and more about Buddhist societies around the world, we found that that wasn't necessarily true, that women can have challenges in Buddhist society as much as they can in Western societies. And the vision, knowing that Thich Nhat Hanh is quite a visionary, I'm just curious if he has a reputation of breaking down those walls of gender that have kept Buddhist women in a particular role, and if you are aware of how he grew that movement.
Thank you for this question. It's wonderful to be able to speak to this. Yes, our teacher has certainly opened up the doors for an incredibly alive, I'm hesitant to say equality between the monks and nuns, because we try not to compare, but I think he has opened up every door of practice that is there for the monks is also there for the nuns. And as our brother was sharing, we live together in a what we call a fourfold community, and we, the nuns, we are autonomous. So that's a wonderful thing for a women's community to be able to make decisions for ourselves. And we live and practice and teach alongside the monks, who are also autonomous from us. It's the best kind of independence from one another and the freedom to create a spiritual life that is adapted to our nature. In the Buddha's time, some of the Buddha's most successful disciples who were able to realize awakening were also bhikshunis, fully ordained women. And we're happy to be able to say that in our community, we also have a large number of fully ordained bhikshunis who become Dharma teachers and who offer teachings to the whole community. Most notably, Sister Chang Kong, so our most senior nun. Sister Chang Kong has been supporting our teacher in his engaged Buddhist peace work and social activism for over 60 years. And so we are very lucky to have her as an inspiration for us, as a wonderful spiritual example. And I think it's quite precious to have a female spiritual leader for young women like myself to be able to take as an inspiration.
You said it was a fourfold community. Did you not?
Yeah, so when we say fourfold, that means that the monks and nuns, the monks live in the monks' hamlet, and they live alongside men who are not ordained. They're young men who come here to work on our vegetable farm, to live and practice meditation alongside us. That's the twofold male sangha, and then the twofold female sangha, that we also live alongside women who are not ordained, who have not made a commitment to be celibate, to shave their heads, to wear a robe, and to follow our vows, our precepts. And so we live in harmony together as what we call this fourfold sangha. So we're very open and engaged with society. We're not sort of shut off behind walls. And we don't sort of hide ourselves in the forest. There's also the forest tradition in Buddhism of those who live a life of recluse in seclusion and silence and contemplation, whereas we really live alongside society, and our practice centers reflect that. So if some of your listeners want to visit our monasteries in America, Blue Cliff Monastery in New York, Magnolia Grove in Mississippi, or Deer Park Monastery in California, they have a chance to join this dedicated community of monks and nuns and see for themselves and access everything that we're doing. They practice sitting meditation alongside us, eating meditation, walking meditation, and we really live with that spirit of community. Our teacher really wanted to create environments of practice where people can touch this deep spiritual dimension that really is described in his book, The Art of Living. And that spiritual dimension is available to us all, and you can get a taste of it by visiting our monasteries. And especially for young women, it can be fascinating to encounter the nuns. That was my experience. I came to the monastery and was delighted to meet these remarkable women who had chosen to become nuns.
Oh, wonderful. In the book, The Art of Living, Tay, and by the way, last week we mentioned that occasionally we would refer to Thich Nhat Hanh as simply as Tay, which means teacher. So in the book, Tay spends a little bit of time talking about afterlife or the purpose of death. And every religion has something to say about death, about afterlife. And there is always a purpose to death across the board. And supposedly, this makes us free of fear. But I find that fear of death, of course, I find that that really isn't the case so much of the time. People, regardless of whatever theology they hold, tend to be somewhat fearful of death. And I'm just wondering if you find in Buddhist communities that same fear is there, or do you see that people really take what Buddhism says about death to heart and drop that fear?
I think the fear of death is something we all practice with. So it might be the fear of our loved ones dying and somehow that we lose them, we lose their physical presence. And of course, fear of our own death, of what will become of us. And the Art of Living is a wonderful exploration of this fear, looking much more deeply into it to really ask ourselves, first of all, the question, what does it mean to be alive? And last week, my brother spoke about the teaching on signlessness. To be alive means that we are continued in every single act, the way we think, what we say, what we do, and our actions sort of radiate out into the world. So we're much vaster, in fact, than just this physical body. And in The Art of Living, for the first time, Tai speaks about 8 different bodies that we have. And so the practice to overcome the fear of death is to train ourselves to see the presence of those 8 bodies in our daily life. So, for example, how we are continued in our physical actions, what we have done in our youth, how we have helped people that we love, how we invest our vitality and our life energy, that continues us across space and time. And our teacher really emphasizes that this physical body is just a small part of who we are. And it's the same with our parents or our children, for those of us who have children, that we, in our own lifetime, we continue our parents and our children continue us. So to overcome the fear of death, we have to be able to see the ways in which we are continuing even the dreams of our parents and how our children may be able to continue the dreams we have not yet realized. And that allows us to release our sense of fear and attachment around this particular physical body and the sign, the image that we are only this body. And I think if there's one big gift in this book, it's to help break through that idea, to really see ourselves as being much, much vaster. So in my own life, I'm happy to share that I have benefited a lot from this contemplation on seeing myself as something more than my body, but also seeing, for example, my parents or my grandparents as being continued in me. And recently my father has been very sick, and it has been so helpful to see the ways in which I am continuing him, and that he continues with all the actions and visions, dreams that he has had in his own lifetime, some of which I've been able to continue, and others of which I see throughout space and time continuing him. So this meditation on signlessness is something we can apply to ourselves, but also to our loved ones. And we can help them to see it too, to help them feel at peace. And also it's a very helpful practice because it also inspires us to do something about those acts we are not so proud of. Perhaps there's something we've said, there's a relationship that is not in a good condition. And when we can really recognize that, we do everything we can right away to heal that. And that's been my father's own experience. And so he's invested much more time in healing those relationships that have not been in such a good place. So this teaching on timelessness and continuation can prepare us also to pass away peacefully and give us hope and confidence in the future.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Sister Dedication. She is a nun and a Dharma teacher with the Unified Buddhist Church and also a disciple of Thich Nhat Hanh. And we're discussing his book today, The Art of Living. Continuing on, Sister, with the idea of afterlife. Now, I would say that if you go up to 100 people who know anything about Buddhism, even if it's just stuff they see on television, probably 100 out of 100 or 99 out of 100 are going to say, oh yeah, Buddhism believes in reincarnation, in a literal understanding of the soul moving out of one body at death and taking residence in another. In the book, Thay explains that, no, that's not really meant to be taken literally. And I'm just curious how wide that understanding is in the worldwide Buddhist community. For instance, would you say that Thich Nhat Hanh would disagree with the understanding that Tibetans Buddhists have had for centuries when they seek the current Dalai Lama? If one Dalai Lama passes away and then they start seeking the new Dalai Lama shortly after that, and they find small children and they give them tests, and if they pass the test, meaning that they are automatically are attracted to certain articles, such as a pair of glasses or a pen or something of the last Dalai Lama, then they consider that proof that this child is in fact the reincarnation of the last Dalai Lama. So I'm just wondering, I mean, if it's an honest disagreement of how the world works, that's fine. I'm just curious if that is the case, that yes, you just disagree with the Tibetan school and you would say that, no, reincarnation does not take place in that way, that it's more more of an analogy.
I think one thing we can say about Buddhism, it's a wonderfully diverse spiritual tradition that has also adapted itself into every environment where it has gone. And as many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, you know, Buddhism began and manifested first of all in India. And at the time in India, there were many different kinds of spiritual beliefs, that some of which found their way into Buddhist teachings. And so Buddhism has always arose in a certain context. But one of our teacher's great contributions is that he has gone back to the source of Buddhism, to those original teachings, in order to really draw out those key elements that are there, also in order to sort of refresh, renew Buddhism and really bring it, bring out its full depth, and revealing the ways in which it's completely in harmony and in line with our scientific understanding of our time as well. And one of those teachings that our teacher has clarified is about this aspect of reincarnation. And I think what's very helpful about this is that when we understand the sense of not having a separate self-entity, then there's a natural continuation of that, that there's no soul that can exist outside our body. And so this our teacher has made very clear, especially in the last few years of his teaching, that it doesn't mean that we there is not continuation. And he, in his book, The Art of Living, he is at goes to great lengths to explain all the ways in which we continue. We are a re-manifestation, if you like, not so much a reincarnation, but a re-manifestation of our ancestors, and our descendants also re-manifest us. Just like the cloud is re-manifested in rain, and the rain is re-manifested in the river and in the ocean, there is continuity. Nothing can be created, nothing can be destroyed. So this is a very helpful message, and it's entirely in line with modern science.
There is a subchapter in the book called Resting in God, and when I first saw that, I cocked an eyebrow or two, because I thought, now, a book on Buddhism, they usually don't use the G word, as I sometimes refer to it. And then reading this, it seems like it is okay. The book sort of gives permission to use the word God with a capital G in certain contexts. And clearly, we're not talking about the Judeo-Christian concept of capital G-O-D. In what context would you be comfortable using the word God?
Our teacher liked to say that when we practice walking meditation, we walk in the kingdom of God. There's a sense that the sacred, the ultimate dimension, is available to each one of us, and we don't need to die to go to heaven. But this place where we live, this beautiful earth, is already heavenly. And one of our insights that our teacher was very excited to have was, we have to put God in the right place. We have to put God in the world around us. As you may know, he had many wonderful friendships with Christian mystics, including Thomas Merton and many others. So, and living for more than 50 years in the West, Tai learned to find ways to speak to the kind of spirituality that we are familiar with. And his interest in teaching here in the West was not to convert people to Buddhism. He invited us all to come back to our spiritual traditions and to touch the depth that is there. So just as St. Francis was able to see the almond tree burst into bloom, to see God, to see the sacred in the almond tree, so us, with our energy of mindfulness, with our daily practice, we are learning to touch what we call the ultimate dimension, the sacred in every moment of our life, no matter what we are doing or where we are walking. And so this is also so for us, the word God is describing what we would call the ultimate dimension, the deepest level of reality. There's sometimes a misunderstanding that somehow we worship the Buddha, or that the Buddha is a kind of God, but it's not the case. The Buddha is our original teacher, if you like, 2,500 years ago. He was a human being who found a way to touch the true nature of reality. So he is our original teacher. But when we talk about touching the ultimate dimension, that is when we would use what you call the G word.
And we only have a few minutes left, but if you could answer this briefly, something that is brought up in the book, Art of Living. What is the action of non-action?
Action of non-action. Our teacher is a wonderful example of the action of non-action. I had the opportunity to be his attendant, which means we walk alongside him as he's going about his daily business, as it were. And I had the impression that as he was walking, he wasn't moving. It seemed that he was stopping in every step, and yet he seemed to be moving quite fast, and I had trouble keeping up with him because I was trying to follow exactly his way of walking. So there's a quality of his being, a quality of his energy of peace, where it's not about action, it's not about doing, but it's about our very way of being. And I think in his own life, Thich Nhat Hanh, Thay, our teacher, was a wonderful master of being very active, but without being lost in the action, without losing himself in what he was doing. But in every gesture, in every step, there was the quality of peace, of arrival, of arriving home. of being completely settled, completely free and at peace. And this is what the kind of experience that we try to offer everyone who comes to our practice centers, the chance to arrive in every step, to feel at home in our body, at home on this earth, arrived into our life, to really feel fully in the present moment. And that kind of quality of being is action. It is bringing something to the world that I think we are missing. We're so busy trying to fix the world. We're so busy doing that we are not really living. And I think it's one core message to this book, The Art of Living. We have to really cultivate our way of being and the energy of mindfulness, the practices of mindfulness, the kind of peace that our teacher is inviting us to recognize is available to us. When we can touch that peace, then we are really improving the quality of our being, including improving the quality of our living, and we can say that we are truly alive. We're not missing out on life. Life is not passing us by. And so if we have an action in our life, if our only action is to improve our quality of being, that's already a great contribution to the world, to world peace, to harmony, and to well-being.
Well, sister, it has been wonderful having you here today. We're out of time now, but we so appreciate your insights.
Thank you so much for having us, Fred. It's been a real honor.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. Today, our guest was a woman who has taken the monastic name of Sister Dedication. She is a Dharma teacher with the Unified Buddhist Church. We've been speaking to her in France, where she resides in a monastery. The book we're talking about today, The Art of Living, which is by Thich Nhat Hanh, the teacher of Sister Dedication. And we invite you to join us again next week here on Common Threads. This is WGVU.